Well, also yesterday, Julian Alfred made history. She is the first woman from St. Lucia, not the first woman actually, but the first athlete from St. Lucia to win a medal. It was St. Lucia's first ever medal at the Olympic Games, and she made sure it was a gold medal. And yesterday as well, it was the Dominican Republic, Dominica, it was their first ever Olympic medal. It was also a gold medal by Thea Lafond in the triple jump event. So history was made yesterday at the Olympic Games. And then we'll talk about the mixed relay, because Femke Bol delivered gold for the Netherlands in the 4x400 mixed relay in impressive, impressive fashion. If you're a Novak Djokovic fan, today is the day to celebrate, because he's gotten one over Carlitos Alcaraz to claim Olympic gold at the Paris 2024 Olympic Games. So is he the greatest of all time in tennis? The jury is already out to decide who is. I mean, the Roger Federer fans are not backing down. So are the Rafael Nadal fans. But Novak Djokovic fans are really, really excited, because he's added one more, that elusive Olympic gold. He's added that to his collection. And then we'll talk about some preseason games, because Chelsea took on Man City, Real Madrid, Barcelona, and United were walloped 3-0 by Liverpool Football Club. And then we'll also be checking out a few things. One of them is that with a defensive backline of three centre-backs, who are you starting, benching, or selling? We are giving you Sergio Ramos, Paolo Maldini, Virgil van Dijk, Cannavaro, and Thiago Silva. Start one, bench one, sell one. And so I've just put a question out there for my guests, just to go through it, ponder over it until the time comes where we decide to get into it. Now, Sports Ultras is just about to begin, but what is luck? For many, luck is that glorious moment when you find money in your trousers right when you're broke. For others, luck is being picked out of a crowd for a reward. For us, luck is a life-changing event, and we believe everyone deserves a shot at it. Luck is coming with exciting prizes that will make your head spin. Want to be the luckiest? Dial *712# and get your tickets. The more you buy, the better your chances of winning. And remember, when you hear the catchy jingle, it's your cue to pay attention, and it could be your lucky day. Luck is on its way to you and your community. So stay sharp. The luckiest, luck is everywhere. But luck wasn't on Ferdinando Manyala's side tonight, when he got into that semi-final, really fast semi-final, and he couldn't find a place to get through to the final. My guests or my colleagues are already in the studio. Orekwampofu is here, so is Kelvin and Bill. Gentlemen, you're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Anyway, let's start. Just straight away, we just saw the semi-final of the men's 100 meters. Bill, what are your initial thoughts?
Very fast, very, very, very fast. I think Ghanaians who really had hope of seeing a Ghanaian in the final for the first time since 2004 would now have to understand that we still have a lot of work to do with our athletes, and we need to, you know, train our athletes well, let them compete in bigger competitions to stand a chance of reaching the final. I mean, going into the semi-final already, of course, Benjamin Azawati had a personal best of 9.90, but that was in 2022. Mm-hmm. And going into the semi-final, his season best was actually at the bottom of everybody. He was at the bottom with his season best. Mm-hmm. And so it goes to show that he hasn't really reached those levels of that 9.90, mm-hmm, since he did it in 2022. And it's worrying, because he's deemed Ghana's fastest man. And I mean, he carries the flag of Ghana when it comes to running in the 100 meters and all of that. And so it's worrying, it's concerning. But we do have to give some good shouts to Abdulrasheed Saminu. I mean, he got past the heats in 10.02, and in the semis, even though he didn't qualify, 10.05 is actually a very, very good time for somebody who is coming in for the very first time. And I think he would be happy with the fact that he got past Fernando Manyala.
Okay, not to cut you, Bill, but the 100-meter final list is already out now. And first person in is Kishane Thompson. He ran 9.80. And then Oblique Seville is the next, run 9.81. Noah Lyles is in 9.83. Fred Kelly, 9.84. Akani Simbine, 987. Letsile Tabogo, 991. Lamont Marcel Jacobs, 992. And Kenny Bednarek, 993.
Tough.
That's how close it Tough. Is in that's the a, men's 100
yeah,
meter
that's
final.
A, that would be a very big one. And a lot of eyes will be on Noah Lawless because he's been talking about being the fastest man in the world and all of that.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of competition now. I mean, he didn't win the heats, he didn't win the semis. So now there'll be a lot of pressure on him to try and get a medal. But I think it's going to be really tough. Kishen, top.
Yeah.
Oblique Seville, top.
Yeah.
I mean, even the current Olympic champion, Jacobs, also top. So it's going to be a very, very tough one for Laos.
Oriku, let me bring you into the conversation. When you look at the times that they ran in the semis, I mean, I'm talking about the finalists, it's just milliseconds that you know, divides or separates everyone from the next person. It's just 1 millisecond between Oblique and Kishane. It's just 2 milliseconds between Oblique and Laos. 1 millisecond between Fred and Laos. And then 3 milliseconds between Akane Simbine and Fred. And then from Letsile Tebogo to Kenny Bednarek, it's just 1-1-1 because Letsile is 991, Lamont Marcel Jacobs is 992, and Bednarek is 993. Huge.
I think it's incredible. And I'm always a sucker for when the list has times that are this close, because whenever it has to do with racing whatever sports, whether it's car racing or it's swimming or running, I do believe that the closer the times are, the better for everyone. It's difficult to really assess the quality or the highest potential of these runners, projecting to the final, because you have to factor in a lot of things, especially when the final was just a couple of hours away from some of the heats. And so some of them would conserve their energies. So it's difficult to really project who would be favorite going into this. But I think one thing that we can expect is that I think the first thing is that the winner would definitely run faster than Marcel Jacobs did 4 years ago.
Mm.
I think we'll probably be in the region of a 9.6, 9.7, whoever wins this, because of the sheer quality.
Yeah.
Because if what I said in the beginning, the fact that a lot of them had to conserve energy, be strategic as to how they finish because the final is just a few hours away, and they are still running this far away from sub 10. This people are running early 9.9, 9.8. Yeah. Then it should tell you that what happens when the pressure is actually higher and there are people to push them and they run at their optimal best. I think we might be seeing some of the fastest times in the last 5 to 10 years in that final. I think it has the potential to actually have the best photo finish where we'll probably finish the race and we're still deciding on who won, arguing like we did with the Marcel Jacobs heat.
Yeah.
I think about 3-4 athletes would be very, very, very close. The winner might separate from them, but deciding second, third, I think would be very hectic.
Kelvin, let me bring you into the conversation. This is the closest I've seen 100 meter semifinal in a very long time. Usually, you can pick out, you know, the finalists, but this looked like it was really stacked and everybody was just up for it from the off. Now, from what Oriku is saying, it is possible that we'll see a 9.6 or a 9.7, which the Olympics hasn't seen since 2016. What are your thoughts on how fast this track has been for these athletes?
Well, I think it's been incredible, especially for the names who just came in and then they are virtually destroying the well-known names that you would have expected them to be up there, like Shane Thompson, like Oblique Seville. You can see the pressure on Noah Lyles. I think he's brought this pressure on himself, and I love the sort of command, especially from the Africans, from Richardson, from Letsile Tebogo, from Akane Simbine. Gone are the days when the Africans would just get to the semifinal and then they would drop off. But this time around, they are gradually proving that they are very good contenders and can make it. You look at Tebogo's time, it may not be impressive as CV and what Kishin gave, but you could see he just had to slow down in the final 15, you know, meters of his race. And it gives you that confidence that, yes, he can go on to do that. For the 9.6, I doubt, but for 9.7, I am very, very sure that Kishin
will probably repeat what he's done in the last couple of months. And it's been phenomenal. It's not just about, you know, the speed. It's about the momentum. And some of them haven't been consistent. And it clearly gives me doubt about someone like Omanyala, where Africans decide to put trust in him. I don't think that guy is ready for the big occasions. It's just going to be like an Aziz Zakari in the biggest occasions, then he'll just, you know, disappoint you. How then do you finish your heat in very good time, your season best in very good time, and it gets to the semifinal, and you are way off that a rookie gets into it, like Saminu, gets into it and beats you in the semifinal? Then where is that claim for you know, that recognition that you need? But I think, you know, this Olympics has given us a lot. Coming into this, just like you are saying, the well-known names, the overwhelming favorite, weren't in there. Noah Lyles, yes, all because of the brag and the sort of, you know, noise that he's made around, because there wasn't any stronger competitor in the last couple of months, which he has ruined the world from the Commonwealth Games to all other the various leagues. I am very happy to see this, and going into the final, it's going to be immense. I love the. Remember, even when was it? Was it Tyson Gay or who welcomed Usain Bolt to the 100 meters that they beat him, or was it the 200? Yeah. Was it Tyson Gay?
Yeah.
Yes, he just beat him for Usain to finish second when Usain came to, you know, the limelight for the very first time. Yeah. But you could see that he wasn't, you know, faced by the crowd, by the tension and everything. How do they manage to do this? Yesterday or earlier this week, you could see the 19-year-old, is it Tia Clinton?
Yeah,
she was just relaxed in a race, and you ask yourself, how does a 19-year-old go through all these? And you have, you know, others who are, you know, way older, more experienced, and then they struggle to do it. Maybe something needs to be picked from them. Even with the Americans, you could see Fred Kelly. He was being haunted by missing the Tokyo final, the previous final, and some of the various finals you'd have expected him to win or be there. Same with Noah Lyles. You could see that just after he finished his heat, he was just having, you know, a very careful look at oblique CV, thinking, come on, how is this guy, you know, strutting past me so easily to finish first in the heat? How am I going to do this by beating him? And I love what we are going to see in the next on who is going to become the world champion for Paris 2024 Olympics. I'm very much interested and happy with what I'm seeing.
Well, so, I mean, just now, World Athletics have just tweeted the finalists, and Kishane Thompson's Twitter handle is I am Kishane. I just clicked on it, and he has 226 followers.
Huh?
That's how many followers he has now.
Ah.
It was an account he set up in October 2023. So we are just looking to see how many people would follow Kishane Thompson.
Oh, it's going to blow.
You know, whatever the final, whatever happens in the final, we're just waiting to see.
Oh, give me the handle, let me follow him. Give me the handle.
It says, I am Kishane. Okay. I am Kishane. Yeah, that's the handle. Every time I refresh it, someone follows. So, yeah, that's just about it. Let's move on now and do a bit of an assessment on Team Ghana's performance there. Bill, let me come to you on Harry, Joselle, and, you know, I'll spread the rest to the others.
Yeah, so for Harry, I think it would be a disappointing one for him. He swam about 1 second slower than his personal best and all of that. And so it wasn't something that he would have liked. Maybe for him, if he had beaten that personal best, I think that would have been a huge win for him, even if he didn't qualify to the next stage. But it is an experience that he will cherish, of course, for a lifetime. I mean, competing at the Olympics itself is a very great honor, and getting it for the first time would be a great honor to him. But it is a learning curve. It is something that he has to learn from. I think the next step is to improve to the point where he wouldn't be deemed a wild card, which is going to be really, really tough. And he has to put in a lot of work in the space of 3 years or so to get to that level. But that is the level that he has to look at. I mean, hitting about 51 seconds in the 100 meter freestyle needs to be hugely improved, because people are giving 48, 47 seconds there, and so, even 46. So there's a 46. So there's a whole five second differential from his time. So he has to put in a whole lot of work in about 3 years to get to that kind of level. I hope he's given the support. I hope he also puts in the kind of the work that he has to put in and be able to improve there. And for Giselle, I think it was probably okay for her regards to what she was able to make out of the 50-meter freestyle. But it also points out to the fact that she has to improve as well and get to a level where she wouldn't be deemed a wildcard to even enter in the first place and compete in possibly a final or something. But I think it's just a learning process for our two swimmers. At least they can see the kind of competition they have to reach and the kind of benchmark that they have to set for themselves and improve in that light as well.
Most definitely. Now, Kelvin, let me bring you in on Rose. I mean, when you assess Rose's performance, yeah. I mean, what do you think? How can she improve in the next few years? Yeah. What's going to happen to her?
Well, I think it was a bit disappointing. Yes, very much disappointing because. From what she did at the African Games and also at the NCAA and also the West African Championships in Douala, I expected her to do better because if you were very consistent with over 1.95 meters to make 1.97 meters at least at the Olympic Games, should have been able to maybe match a record or even do a 1.95. But just like they always say, that the first, you know, event would always, you know, get you struggling because of that pressure. But I always say this to myself, that from where we have our athletes, and you followed these senior high school games for a very long time, those who manage to compete are the ones from, you know, the less privileged societies, the less, you know, well-to-do societies, that it becomes difficult for them to come out with, you know, that sort of confidence. So for someone like Rose, where she's coming from, even you speak to some of her mates at Kumasi Girls, and she wasn't, you know, that lady you'd see always around a lot of people, always in a quiet zone doing her thing. So, you know, we always need something more of like a psychologist to get things in there. And it's not just about athletics. Even in football, remember how Stephen Appiah managed to push some of the players back when we were playing the World Cup qualifiers? Remember that 2017 when we scored, was it against Cameroon or which country that we scored, and then they disallowed the goal? We couldn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup.
Yeah.
Stephen Appiah said as soon as they were coming out, he just pushed all of them back and told them with the crowd that they are going to see, they need to calm down. And he realized some of the players were actually shivering. And it's the same thing even for Emmanuel Adekwe-Papo at the 2004 Athens Games. For someone very much experienced, played in some of the biggest games in Ghana, it happened to him. And even at this top level, some of the players do struggle. It's sad that we have a team and then there's no psychologist. At least if there wasn't any psychologist, Rosie's coach should have been part of this. And I really have a bit of difficulty with that. But that notwithstanding, she's 22. She has more years ahead of her. The next Olympics, she's going to be 26. Mm. And that will give her that confidence, because I know with this, she's going to train a lot more, go for more outdoor meetings. But when it comes to this level, you ask yourself, is Ghana Athletics, is the Ministry of Sports ready to support these athletes to go for more competitions in order to overcome that stage fright and be very much confident anytime they meet some of these greats? Look at Femke Ball. We're talking about her and how she stormed to that victory over the Americans. If it was a Ghanaian, I'm not sure she would have that confidence to see three people ahead of her and just get past them, each one of them, in every single minute to win the race. So hopefully, in the next 4 years, if we give her that support, because some of these athletes, right after school, they are only competing for us because they have the privilege to compete in their school's athletics. If she completes school right now with no sponsorship to cater for her training and her development, what happens? She's going to drop off.
Mm. Yeah.
Let's not forget, even at the African Games, she nearly declined coming.
Mm.
She came just 2 days and she won the event. Same thing happened when she decided to go for the West Africa Championship. And luckily, due to her natural, you know, that skill that she possesses, she went there to do it. So all we need is that consistency to keep supporting her. If we fail to support her, like we've done to Joseph Polamwa and some of the other athletes, John Mpoma, they'll continue to do their own things. That would be beneficial to them.
Mm.
And they won't ever come good. They'll just come and then participate and nothing good will come. Remember what Deborah did in the last Olympics?
Yeah.
She only came, but was she prepared? No, she wasn't too prepared for it. but she only came to compete because she felt, let me just go and honor my nation. Mm. It's the same thing that has happened to some of these athletes. If we don't continue with that development, she's going to fall. I see great potential in her. At the age of 22, with that raw skill, which needs to be polished a bit. If it's done for her, I'm sure she will take us to places in the next Olympics 4 years to come.
Oriku, let me give you a bite on Saminu and Azamati.
What more do I have to say? I mean, the truth is that our guys are miles away, and it's not just about a particular event. It's a running theme throughout the different disciplines that they're participating in the sense that what we are hearing is that, or what we are noticing is that a lot of them actually do rely on the experiences that they get from college, and once they're done, it's almost like there's no plan as to how to continue the development of our athletes in that sense. And the unfortunate thing is that the rest of the world is moving very fast. There's really no time to catch up. If anything, Ghana actually needs to double up with this athlete. Take swimming, for instance, where Leon Marchand, he's just 22 years.
Yep.
He's just won 4 gold medals at the Olympic Games. And you would sit back and think, this Marchand guy came from nowhere. And probably, he's in France, and that's why he's in Europe, has the best facilities, that's why he's winning. But all you don't know is that his coach, Bob Bowman, is the same person that coached Michael Phelps.
Mm.
Now, can you imagine how much Bob will be charging per month to train him for the past 3-4 years, or however long he's coaching for?
Mm-hmm.
It will require tons of money, because this is someone who is coming with a CV of having trained the best swimmer we've ever seen. And so that gives you an idea of how the people we're competing with for a medal are investing in their athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So this gold medals that you're seeing today, the fact that everyone is talking about Marchand is great. But what we also don't know is how much money went into this preparation. And it's not just about the coach. There's a lot of focus on conditioning, that they can hold their heads up high. But I think there would also be that case of disappointment for someone like Azamati. Because when he burst onto the scene about 4 or 5 years ago, this was a guy that was the fastest man in the country. When Azamati was running sub 10, a lot of the athletes that we're seeing today were nowhere close to sub 10.
Mm-hmm.
He got there and never went back.
Yeah.
And no one is asking that question, that how you see, the thing about running is that you should get better.
Get better,
You cannot move from, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, Azamati would be like, 21?
22. Yeah.
If anything, you should have more experience, better muscle, and most importantly, more training under your belt in the next 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I feel athletes should be peaking around 27, 28, 29. For someone that was running sub 10 before he turned 22, since then, he's not run sub 10 again.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me. And we sit back and we say, but have we given him the best chance to develop? You're talking about the case of Rose.
Yeah.
The only time that they will get the best resources is when they go to school. Yeah. But school
and
is only for 4 years.
That has happened to Azamati. Yeah. Since he finished the college and left the collegiate games, the development has, because he's doing it himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't get that support. He doesn't get that competition.
Mm-hmm.
And when there is no competition, you never know whether you are getting better or not.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have the best of attention from coaches and developers.
Mm-hmm.
And even with your nutrition, and when you ask them the sort of money that they invest in, look at what Joe Paul does for us.
Mm.
Imagine if we are giving him just 30% of the support that he had during his time in college. But I've been one of the best for us. But this is Ghana.
Yes, it's rather unfortunate that the discussion, I remember after the Tokyo Games, was similar.
Yeah.
Oh, these guys have done well.
Yeah, I'm tired of that discussion.
Yeah, it never ends.
Yeah, it just seems like we'll never be seriously competing for medals in any event. And that's fine if that's what our leaders do want. But, I saw a video of you know, country, different videos of countries cheering their athletes on. And I think the people of Ghana also deserve something good.
Yep.
Yeah.
A lot of people tuned in their TV today hoping for something great. It's a moment of national pride to see your... Look, you're not doing yourself any favor if every day you just go there to participate. What a gold medal would do for this country, no amount of money can replicate that.
They don't know that.
And that's what we need to understand. The value that gold medals do bring. And you see, it's not even about just any gold medal. A gold medal in the headline event in athletics. Imagine this 100-meter race. I can bet you almost everyone in this world would watch it.
Yeah.
Even people that are not interested in athletics would watch it.
So the thing is, look at what it did for Marcel Jacobs.
Yeah. It changes life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
crazy long jumper. Now he's a recognized player. Yes, that's a Twitter handle because he started as a long jumper.
Yeah.
So crazy long jumper, is still there, but because of that, he's become one of the famous, you know, persons in the world.
Let me just take you guys to the last semifinal.
Uh-huh.
So, Benjamin Richardson,
mm-hmm.
the South African,
yeah,
he ran 9.95. And he didn't make it into the finals. Sandy Brown ran 9.96, personal best. He didn't make it to the final. Andre DeGrasse, 9.98, season best. Didn't make it into the final. And then there was Zanel Hughes, the British 100-meter record holder. He ran way below his personal best in 10.01. Saminu, 10.05. Omanyala, 10.08. And then their last guy had 10.14.
Hey, Omanyala.
So that's it. I mean, Omanyala, a lot of disappointments there for many Kenyans. I'm sure a lot of the Kenyans who are watching from Nairobi, Mombasa, Kisumu, and everywhere will be so disappointed at what Omanyala did. But let me just take you also to the lane assignments for the final.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny Bednarik is in lane 2.
Yeah.
Lane 3 has Fred Kelly. So that's two Americans in there. And then lane 4 has Kishane Thompson. Lane 5 has Akani Simbine. Lane 6 has Oblique Seville. Lane 7, Noah Lyles. Lane 8, Tebogo. Lane 9, Marcel Jacobs. Mm. So that's how it's spread. And I think that a lot of the storylines around it is that Oblique Seville actually beats Noah Lyles right before the Olympic Games in the last Diamond League. And so the two of them have a rivalry going on, and they are running side by side by each other in lane 6 and in lane 7. Tebogo, who won silver at the World Championships last year to Noah Lyles, he just won silver right behind Noah Lyles, is also running on his side in lane 8. And then the Olympic champion is running in lane 9. And the advantage you get in lane 9 is that no one sees you coming.
Yeah.
And if you run your own race, you can just blitz past everyone. That's what Shakari Richardson did in Budapest.
Yeah.
And so hopefully that helps him. Fred Kelly in lane 3. I mean, usually when you listen to the 100-meter runners, the lane 2, lane 3 are not particularly good lanes that they would want to be in. But Fred Kelly would have to take that. And Kishane Thompson is in lane 4. And Akani Simbine is in lane 5. Now, I think that if we are talking about African athletes, Akani Simbine is one that we should tip our hat over for. He's been so consistent in 100 meter races. So congratulations to him. Now, before Akani Simbine, there was Anaso Jobodwana, who was a 200 meter runner, but he wasn't as consistent as Akani Simbine was. Let's touch a bit on the women's 100 meter final, and then we can do
before,
some football.
Before we do that, let's do just this. I just want a minute to do this.
Yeah.
Football can never be matched anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
In Ghana, football can never be matched by any other sport. It is quite understandable. But the sort of investment that goes into football and the sort of disappointment that has come. Earlier today, we're having a conversation where Oreko was saying that, you know, people have persevered and then they've managed to win the medals that they want. Look at Fenke Ball, what she did. Look at Novak Djokovic. You know, you look at some of the other athletes, Marcel Jacobs, you know, from a sprinter to from a long jumper to this. We cannot match the sort of money and investment football brings to this country.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine giving one player $10,000 for winning a single match, or $8,000
mm-hmm.
for winning a single qualifying match.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you giving that $10,000 the whole year to someone like Benjamin Azamati, to someone like Joe Paul, that, oh, the country cannot support too much, but at least this is what we are offering you. Wouldn't that be beneficial for some, to prepare them for some of the top meetings in the world, to prepare them for events like this? Or we cannot even say these are our top athletes. We are spending $20,000 each on them for the year before the Olympics to prepare them adequately for the biggest stage in the world. Can't we do this? You know, it is something the National Sports Authority, the Ghana Olympic Committee, every single one of them should think about this and at least push it forward. They come and sit and they act like nothing is going on, nothing is, but they push people outside for, you know, events that are not needed.
Yep.
And the nation funds it.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they push for some of these at least to enjoy these benefits aside the scholarships? The scholarship that does not even come from the country. It comes from these colleges because these guys are good and they're enjoying these benefits. Why don't we make a conscious effort? Like when the Black Stars fell and we made a conscious effort, brought gold fields to them, and from 2006, we have been on a high, though we haven't won any championship, but we have been top there. Same thing can be done for some of our top athletes. Now we have Botio, Dadzi, even Saminu, Azamati is still, you know, in there.
Yeah.
There is Rose. You know, I know there are a couple of other people coming up. Why don't we focus on a few? Even if it's five of the best that we have, focus on them, get them in there. They're going to get a result. Look at the, you know, the go on Google and see the number of searches Saint Lucia has had in the last 24 hours, all because of what Julian Alfred did yesterday. Many didn't know there was a country like that.
Now I want to go there.
Yes, now Oracle wants to go there. Yesterday, you could see the sort of joy and the fun to the people when they were having the watch party. Now people know that there is Saint Lucia, a country in the world like that. At least, let's give in our little to these athletes.
Yep.
Just for the glory of the nation.
If there's one thing Nigeria has done well, it is to fund athletes. And I know that they did that for Blessing Okagbare.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've done that for a few other athletes. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, if you're listening to us, Mr. Benunu Mensah, these are our concerns. I mean, something has to be done about it. A lot of these athletes need personal trainers. They need equipment. They need stuff to train with. I mean, it's just unreal that all of this talent goes to waste because we are not helping them to build up.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's move on. And
now, just as I say, the Olympics is not 1-2 weeks before. Exactly. Taking them to Strasbourg doesn't change anything.
Yeah. Yep.
2 weeks before the Olympics, whoever is going to make the final, we all know.
Yeah.
So that means that the real work is from now till
the next
LA.
Olympics. Yeah.
So it's what happens in the next 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. And like Calvin was saying, you know, when it's not your money, you can budget recklessly.
Mm-hmm.
Because in any objective world that we have people who are actually thinking, if you look at the budget we've taken for the last 2 AFCONs that we've been so poor, and you look at the trajectory of the athletics team and even boxing in Africa and then worldwide, if you had, let's say, $5 million, how would you allocate the money? It's not, if the football is showing you signs, fine. But it is not. That is what I do not understand. And no one is saying that take all the football money.
Yeah.
But if there's another sport that's requiring attention, why not slash? Sometimes you go to AFCON and the people who are accompanying the Black Stars players are even more than the players.
Yeah.
And the state is taking care of all of this. Look, if we are very, very deliberate about how we budget, because what we've seen with the Black Stars is that we have money.
Yeah.
So now we know that we have abundance of it for sport. But everything or majority of it seems to go to the Black Stars. Why?
Yeah.
Why? We've seen, yes, you can make the argument, people watch Black Stars more, they attract more. And so what? The Wimbledon winner for the woman gets the same as the man.
Yeah.
When you watch all the matches, you can see that more people watch a man than women. But why are they doing that? To ensure that the woman can catch up. That's how life is. If you don't give someone a helping hand, they won't catch up. Athletics won't automatically reach the level of football if you don't deliberately push it. And so enough of that chat that, they're not bringing sponsors. This is, help them get the sponsors. If you help Azamati and he gets to the final, when you go to a sponsor, next time they'll say, oh, I know this guy. I saw him in the final.
If he wins gold, the sponsors will come. Exactly. Or even if he wins a bronze, the sponsors will come.
When they started winning, we are wearing Essex for all the athletes because of their performance.
Yes.
Before that, did you see the kind of kit we wore for our races? They were just so bad.
Right now we are wearing Asics, and people forget that it is because of how good these athletes were. And every time I see slander around these athletes, it surprises me a lot, because look, we went to the London Olympics without a sprinter.
Yeah.
We went to Rio with one sprinter, Emmanuel Dasso. Yeah. He competed in 200 meters. Yeah. And that was it. And these guys have made sure that they made a final at the 4x100 in Tokyo.
Yeah.
They made a semi-final in 100 meters this time around.
Yeah.
And I certainly believe they would make the final of the 4x100 relay again.
Yeah.
So what is really the problem? What else do they need to do to get that level of sponsorship that they need? How do they get better if you are not trying to help them do better? Yeah. And it's a sad, really. Because, look, to put all of this into perspective, the last time any Ghanaian was in the semi-final of the 100 meters at the Olympics was in 2004.
Yeah.
It was Leo Miles Mills and Aziz Zakaria.
Yeah.
2004.
Yeah.
Aziz Zakaria tried to make the semi-final again in 2008, but he was too old. He couldn't.
Yeah.
Look, we need to support these athletes. What shows that after this experience for Saminu, he's not going to make the semi-final again in LA? But for him to make it, he would need a lot of work, a lot of branding, so that he can be called up to Diamond Leagues.
You understand? Yeah.
Before he can actually get those, comfortable places. Because look, many times, you even develop a rivalry with somebody because you become friends.
Yeah.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Fred Kelly and Noah Lyles have a rivalry on the track because they've known each other for a very long time.
Yeah.
If Saminu starts competing with these guys and gets comfortable with them, what shows that he can't beat them on the track if they face each other at whatever point? But anyway, let's move away from athletics. Let's do some football because we are just about, we just have around 19 minutes to end the show. Yesterday there was Man City, Chelsea, Real Madrid, Barcelona, and then United, Liverpool. Oreku, talk to me about Chelsea.
Oh, as I said last week, I'm fine. See, we are very experienced in this. The thing about preseason is very deceptive. Look, since Barcelona and Real Madrid started playing in the US for how many years? Real Madrid have never beaten Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Barcelona beat them. Real Madrid went on to win Champions League and La Liga.
Yeah.
Last season, I think Manchester United beat Liverpool 4-0. I can't remember, but yeah, they were quite good in preseason. The season started, a lot of things changed. I think it gives you an indication of where you are, most importantly, physically. And that's just that. That's really just that. If we beat Man City with Calvin Phillips as center back and academy players playing as left back, left center back, central midfield, O'Reilly and all that, yes, it's good for your confidence, but it doesn't mean much, because when we meet them in 3 weeks, it will be a completely different side. And that's why I just think that preseason is just about friendlies. Look, Chelsea, for me, I saw them make mistakes at the back, but what that tells me is that this is a team that wants to play in a certain way. There are certain level of risk that they are going to take, and that is the most important thing for me. It's good to start making those mistakes now, for you to see the players that can actually play in the way that you want, rather than when the season starts. That's the purpose of friendly games. And even if you are going by the numbers, look, at the on face value, Chelsea created more chances than Manchester City. If they were more clinical, they would have probably won the game. But then again, I'm not even looking at the results. I'm more interested in the process, the combination of our midfield. Is it going to be Enzo, Caicedo? Where does Lavia, who is returning, fit? Who's our best starting central defenders? I think those are the questions that need a lot more answers. As for the results there, I think that was City's first win in the US, and it doesn't really mean much. For Pep, he said that his biggest takeaway is the fact that McAtee and O'Reilly are now promoted to the senior team. And so if that's the only thing that he picked from the US, that these two players can play in the senior national team, that's the most important thing for him. The results don't matter. And for Chelsea, I'm hoping that at the end of this tour, there will be one big takeaway that player X cannot play for Chelsea. Or it informs the coach, Maresca, that this is the, like what Juventus have done with Motta, this is my list of players that I've put on sale. They cannot play my system. If that's what Chelsea gets from tour, perfect. I don't mind about the result. I want a big takeaway from preseason. That is the most important thing for me. When the season progresses, things will definitely change. The results would get better. But some of the decisions that you're able to take with these preseason games is what's more important to me.
Most definitely. Thank you so much, Oriku. And there was Real Madrid-Barcelona as well as United-Liverpool. Bill?
Yeah, Real Madrid-Barcelona. I mean, it's El Clasico, but it's also preseason. So you wouldn't really pick much from it, especially knowing that Real Madrid didn't go with a very, very complete and very strong squad. Mbappe is not around. There are other players, key players who are not around, and are expected to actually play in the Super Cup. And even Carlo Ancelotti mentioned how he was going to prioritize the Super Cup because it's a competition they would want to win, a trophy they want to win. And so I wouldn't really take much, but maybe Barcelona, for Hansi Flick, he would probably be a bit happier because he does have a lot of people in the academy that he can actually give chances to. And again, also looking at Barcelona's financial problems and all of that, it's quite crucial to have to depend more on the academy players and try and promote them as quickly as possible and give them the opportunity to play and then show their skills in La Liga, in the Champions League and all of that. And so I think for Hansi Flick, he would be happy that he's getting, you know, a crop of young players that he can work with. But for Real Madrid, I don't think they'll be really moved by whatever happened, because there's still Mbappe to come, there's still other players to come, and we would see a kind of system that Ancelotti will play with, you know, his best players. But I was really, really impressed with what Arda Güler did. He's a fantastic player. Yeah. I think he's someone that...
How about Endrick?
Endrick has work to do.
Keep on work.
Oreku is always the optimist amongst us. Oreku, will Endrick make it? will he make it at Real Madrid? Maybe I should say that.
I think the move was too soon. It feels like the Odegaard move. Mm. There's obviously talent in there, but the hype has preceded the talent, and that's what I fear for him. Even with Vinicius, when he was coming, the expectation wasn't this much. Mm. And it just feels like they've signed a demigod from Brazil. Mm-hmm. The next big thing since
next Pele.
Neymar or Pele. And the comparisons have already been there. And the tricky thing is that more than half of the people talking about Endrick didn't even watch him in Brazil.
Yeah.
They didn't watch a single game. Anytime they saw him was some picture that he has done black and white, and they are comparing him to Pele.
Yeah.
And so people don't really know what to expect. And the truth is that being thrown from South American football straight into European football is not a joke. Even for the players that are much older and more experienced, they take time to settle. How much more a kid who is not even a full-blown adult yet? I would have thought that a loan move would have been better, especially because I think Real Madrid are okay up front. They even have an ongoing dilemma without you, Endrick, on who to play. Mm. And so I don't expect him to get a lot of games. That would also come with this pressure. But I think Ancelotti should be the right man to manage him. We saw how he worked with Arda Güler last season, where getting to the latter part of the season, he incorporated him very well, and then he ended the season very strongly. So I'm sure he'll get his opportunities, but the eyeballs are just too many, and that's what I fear for him.
Endrick. Pressure.
How old is he?
17.
I think he's 18 now.
18 now.
Yeah, he just turned 18
He's 18.
Yeah, he's just
18.
And he was telling us that his childhood legend is Bobby Charlton. even Gary Lineker's childhood legend is not Bobby Charlton.
but I really wonder where he watched the boy, because you know the funny side of it. When you look at the youngsters that Real Madrid have assembled or have previously assembled, they showed glimpses top quality. Look at what Arda Güler gave at the European Championships. You can clearly see the quality with him.
Yeah.
If you see Endrick, sincerely, if you see Endrick, do you see anything? If you're given the chance to pick between Endrick and Bukayo Saka, at their ages, when Saka was 17, approaching 18, and then Endrick at 17, 18. Which one would you pick?
Oh, Endrick has a lot more hype.
Saka is not going to feel Bernabeu, is he?
No,
Endrick is going to feel Bernabeu because of the hype around him that he's coming to Real Madrid. That is it.
No, I think it was more of them tapping into the market for him too.
How many goals did he score?
No, it's not about his goals. Endrick has never been about his goals.
No, never.
It's always about the black and white pictures, please.
Anyway, let's just play our game before we end the show. I mean, you are just about a few minutes to end the show, just about 11 minutes to do that.
Novak has been phenomenal.
Yeah, Novak. Oh, how could I have forgotten? my legend, the GOAT.
Oh, yeah, top.
The GOAT has won his Olympic gold medal. Kelvin.
You see, what marveled me about his performance this time around was how he decided to keep his cool. Ordinarily, in the last tournament or in the last few occasions that he's met Carlos Alcaraz, you can see he's always in a rush with his volleys, with his serves, with the returns, you know, thinking that everything was going smoothly. But this time around, he was just calm, relaxed. And then the unforced errors rather came from, you know, Carlos Alcaraz. Yeah. And, you know, he was just so relaxed. And he managed to use that experience and brilliance that he decided to stop Roger Federer when Federer was getting to the finals almost every time with him to break down, you know, Alcaraz. Though Alcaraz is not as brilliant as you would expect him to be on any other court, he struggles with clay a bit.
Mm.
But the sort of tennis we saw from Novak Djokovic this afternoon was top quality. And, you know, he's wanted this for God knows how long. Mm-hmm. And finally, it's come home. It cemented his status. And I think there's no debate now. You know, no debate now who is the greatest when it comes to tennis. The flamboyance and, you know, that cliche around Roger Federer, it's always there. But when it comes to, you know, winning, you know, getting over the line and doing everything right, I think Novak has done great. And Alcaraz has a lot more years ahead of him.
Mm.
He can come back, but this can also break him, because in the next couple of years, you don't expect it to be Djokovic and then Zverev for you to be beating them.
Mm-hmm.
The likes of Sinner and others are going to get better. Aliasim came one time, he left off. Alcaraz is going to dominate, but he should expect, you know, lots of, you know, troubles. He's younger now. If he had won this, he would have just relaxed.
Yeah.
But if he's going to grow, he's going to walk through, you know, the physical battle of staying fit enough for some of these championships. And just like Oriko said, Djokovic only came to the Wimbledon to test his strength ahead of this. The reason why, when he got to, was it the semis that he said he wasn't going to play? Or it was the quarterfinals that he said he won't play?
No, it was the semis.
Yes, he qualified, but he said
no. They're talking about Roland Garros, right?
Roland Garros.
Said
he wasn't going. He wasn't going to play, and clearly gave you an indication of the plan that he had ahead of him. So, good enough for him, and I think he's going to be celebrated for the rest of the years. But Alcaraz has a lot to do to get in there. He easily gets frustrated. He's too emotional, like Rafa Nadal.
Oh, he's young.
He's young.
Just
wait.
Young, and then you
Kalitos
get frustrated
will
like this.
Kalitos will go.
Just
wait. Look, people like Zverev, Medvedev would want what Alcaraz has now. So it's fine. So just allow the boy to be a bit emotional.
Yeah, he's better than Chonga anyway.
just a quick one on Novak. I think sports always has the best way to give us life lessons, in the sense that, look, Novak has been the greatest tennis player in the world for the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
And in the previous Olympic Games, especially in 2016, where he went into the Olympics having won, I think, the Australian Open and then the French Open, he was arguably the best tennis player in the world. He got to the Olympics, shivers took all over, and then he lost to Del Potro, and he was in tears, actually. Mm-hmm. 2020 wasn't any better. Now, 2024, when he's 37, I don't think he would play another, or he was going to play another Olympic Games, regardless of whatever happened.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the truth is that everything was calculated from that knee injury at the French Open when he pulled out. The reason why I think he actually pulled out was the Olympic Games. And he did the surgery, came back, came to Wimbledon just to test himself. And you could tell from his body language that when he lost at Wimbledon, for the first time, I had never heard Novak say his opponent was way better. There was absolutely nothing that he could do. And I genuinely believe he didn't come to the tournament to win. And he tested himself, tested a knee, and got to the final. Now, with all those games under his belt and maintaining his number two seed, he was able to go into the Olympic Games with a very decent draw. And the thing about, I think I was talking to Bill and Kelvin about the difference in surfaces, is that I feel sometimes it's destiny that his last Olympic Games had to be on clay. On any other surface, he was never going to get close to Alcaraz. Mm-hmm. Clay is the slowest surface out of all the three. Is the one that gives him the chance to be able to recover some balls that he shouldn't. Alcaraz is very aggressive, loves to hit winners. It works very well on grass, worked very well in the Wimbledon final. But on clay, Djokovic took a better chance because the ball will be slower for him. And it's more about your intelligence, the drop shots, moving your opponent, that he can still do at 37. And interestingly, when he was on form in 2020, he never won it. Mm. The year that he has lost a couple of Grand Slam finals, the year that he got injured, did a surgery just about a month and a half ago, and is actually wearing a brace. Yeah. That was the moment that the sporting gods decided to give him what he's wanted all his career. Mm. So I think it's a really nice life lesson that what you can do is just keep going. There are times where you feel your breakthrough should be here. This is it. Why am I not getting this? I'm the best in this. I should be getting this job. And then the moments where you take your mind off, like nothing is going right. I mean, if you keep pushing, you would finally end up with something.
Yeah. So from what you said, all I've deduced from it is that the sporting gods hate black stars. Yeah, that's all I can deduce from this. The sporting gods just hate black stars. And I mean, whatever we've done to them, we are sorry. Please, sporting gods, do something for us.
We want AFCON, yeah.
Look, it's far too long. Hey, how many years now? 50?
Over 42
I
now.
I think 40, next AFCON will be like,
44, 45.
Wow. Don't win that one too. We're going to 48
Well, I think we'll surpass 50, to be honest. Anyway, this one, quick one. How many minutes? We have 4 minutes. So, you have a defensive back line of three center backs. Three center backs.
Okay.
Who are you picking from this pool? Defensive back line of three center backs. I mean, let me see. How many center backs are listed here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. So, three center backs. Who are you starting in your three?
Yeah.
So, starting three, benching one, selling one. Okay. Sergio Ramos.
We're starting three, benching one, selling one.
Sergio Ramos, Maldini, Van Dijk, Cannavaro, Thiago Silva. Start three, bench one, sell one.
Maldini plays as my left center back.
Maldini has to stay for me.
Maldini stays. Maldini stays for me, Kelvin.
Ramos stays for me.
Okay. Producer says he wants his 1-1-1.
Okay.
So, Bill, let me start with you.
So, Maldini first. Yeah. Ramos second.
Ramos.
And
now you have Van Dijk, Cannavaro, Thiago Silva left.
I'm not going to think Ballon d'Or. Please give me Thiago Silva.
So, Bilishan says Thiago Silva, Sergio Ramos, Maldini.
Yeah, give me those three.
Who are you keeping on the bench?
Who are you keeping on the bench? Who are you selling? Cannavaro or Van Dijk?
Oh, bench Cannavaro. Van Dijk, selling Van Dijk. We don't defend with aura here, please.
Kelvin, let's go.
So, the same order, Ramos on the right side. Ramos,
okay.
And then I play Maldini on the left.
Mm-hmm.
I put Thiago Silva in the heart of it all.
So same one?
Yes. And then
who are you selling? Who are you benching?
I'm selling Cannavaro. I play Van Dijk on the bench.
Mm. Okay. Very cool.
The easiest decision, Cannavaro sold. don't call me. Now, out of the four.
Yeah.
Maldini, as I said, would be my left center back.
Yeah.
In the middle, I'll go with Virgil van Dijk.
Mm.
And then my right center back.
Hey, Ramos with Thiago Silva. Wow.
Who
I'll go Ramos.
Ramos. You are benching
Thiago Silva. Yeah. Wow.
I think Thiago is very good. But I'm just looking at peak, to be honest. That's my metric. Right. I'm just looking at peak.
Right.
In their peak, who was top? I think Van Dijk 2018, 2022, arguably the best we've seen.
Yeah. I think so too.
Ramos for a long time, like 2011 to 15, 16.
Yeah.
Maldini's era at top. Cannavaro, what was his peak?
Ballon d'Or.
Yes,
with Joe Hendricks.
I think Cannavaro was an okay defender. He was just in the right place at the right time, captained the team that.
And he had a really good tournament.
Yeah.
And a very talented team as that.
Yes. Anyway. Because, you know, Mancini, Fabio Grosso, he had Gattuso in front of him.
He was defending with Nesta.
Cameronesi
in front of him.
And he played for Real Madrid.
Yes.
So the Ballon d'Or.
Real Madrid team, the way Barcelona. Yeah. Use them, Messi was using him anyhow. Cannavaro.
Anyway, this is how we wrap up the show here on the Sports Ultras. It's another exciting edition of it. Thank you, Oreku. Thank you, Kelvin. Thank you to Bill as well.